Hello and welcome to Comedy in a Nutshell, the podcast with me, Mark DiCono, the comedy nerd. You know, every one of us has a perspective on what comedy is and what it means to us. But what about the people who write and perform it? Why do they do it? What does it mean to them? And how would they define it? In this podcast, I hope to find out. You can find out more about my journey in comedy fandom on my website, thecomedynerd.com. I love talking to the people in comedy about comedy. If you'd like to hear what they have to say as much as I do, then please like, subscribe, rate, review, and share the podcast. Thank you. My guest this episode is a comedian who's drawn attention recently as runner-up for So You Think You're Funny in 2022 and being nominated for Chortle Best Newcomer in 2023. It's stand-up comedian, Pravanya Pillay. So if we begin at the beginning, how did you first encounter comedy? How did it come to your attention?
I think through sitcoms, really. Mm-hmm. Like, I was just obsessed with sitcoms. I would just watch them like over and over again. American sitcoms mainly. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember, like, obviously when I was younger, it was like Friends, How I Met Your Mother, things like that. Like when I was a kid, and then, which, you know, they like, I mean, I think Friends has aged quite well, but obviously How I Met Your Mother has not. I was just really obsessed with that. And I was like obsessed with TV in general.
Yeah.
And TV shows, like really obsessed with that. I think that was specifically comedy. But then when I was really small, one of my earliest memories is like being obsessed with Bollywood films and Bollywood movies.
Yeah.
And like the first thing I ever wanted to be was a Bollywood actress. Like that was my dream when I was a kid. And I was like a very showy kid as well. I would always be kind of like dancing and singing, and I used to do this thing where basically my mom and dad like watched the news. And I would like watch it with them. I was like 4 or 5. And then I would ask them who all the politicians were, and then I learned all the politicians. Like I learned Tony Blair's cabinet basically, and then they would, and then it was like a party trick where they would be like, who's the prime minister? Who's the chancellor of the exchequer? And I would like read off who everyone was. So I was very showy, and I used to always do stuff, like really weird stuff like that. But yeah.
Well, so that wasn't like a political aspiration. It was just to prove that you could do something.
Yeah. I'm still really obsessed with New Labour as well. I think that little activity has ingrained New Labour into my life, and I will forever be obsessed with New Labour.
So at what point then did comedy become a career option for you?
Really late on. As I said, I was like super obsessed with comedy and with sitcoms in particular.
Yeah.
Stand-up is something that has sort of grown on me. Like it was never something that I watched loads of. I was actually studying to do medicine at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I got really, really into The Daily Show. I used to watch it every time, like, because it was obviously a lot of studying, but every time I took a break, I would watch like old Daily Show episodes, old Daily Show clips.
Yeah.
So I knew loads about the Iraq War, but it was like 2012, so no one wanted to talk to me about it. I was just watching this one clip. It's like, it was really stupid, like Stephen Colbert, and it's like a prank show, but instead of pranking people, he baptizes them. And I just remember finding it so funny. Like I had never found anything this funny before. And I kind of was like, oh my God, this is what I want to do. So that's when I sort of realized that like I wanted to do comedy. And then it was just like switching over, which is not a smooth transition, I would say. Like it is a bumpy transition from medicine to comedy.
Yeah. So where was Bollywood and politics during this?
I don't know. I've always loved the films. Like I always watch the films. I tend to watch the old films.
Yeah.
Not a lot of the new films that I like, but I love the old films. And then with politics, like I've just always been really obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And I was really obsessed with Ed Miliband in 2015. Really, really obsessed. Me and my friend Becky Pickett, she's a nurse. We wrote a Ed Miliband rap and performed it. So
would it be unjudicious to ask for an extract?
I can't remember it. I would love to give you an extract.
Oh,
I remember that one. There was one line about the mansion tax. Becky has like a much better memory for it. I wish I wrote it down somewhere, and I don't know where it is. And I think that that is maybe the greatest loss of all time.
that
That is a huge cultural loss for the world. That I lost that notebook with the raven. It was like, sorry that your party's given you the axe. Really could have used that mansion tax. Like we really focused in on the mansion tax. We were like, we should have a mansion tax. We want a mansion tax. Like that was the thing that we were really angry about. But that's the only line I remember, and it's such a shame. And also I got a new laptop as well, so I made like a GarageBand beat for it as well. I mean, the beat was like, it was just like one drum, I think. But yeah, it's honestly a real shame. There are pictures from it, but yeah, no video, which is again a shame.
Crying shame.
Yeah.
So, what was your first appearance then as a stand-up comedian?
That was quite. I tried. I joined the Improv Society at uni, and I used to do a lot of improv. And then I tried stand up in 2015. It was actually like the day after the election. The whole set was about the election. It was like all about Ed Miliband. It was all about how I had a crush on Ed Miliband and how sad I was. And I think it was like my first ever set, and I think it was like a, and like it was very political. Like it was like very satirical. And that was largely because of The Daily Show. It was because like I was like, oh, I love The Daily Show, so I'll do satire. And then I did, yeah, so I did this set that was like super political, and it was yeah, it was well received, but I think it was like well received because everyone agreed with my opinions rather than it being funny. Like everyone was like, yeah, we are really sad about the election too. Like, oh. I don't think it was good. I also don't know where it is. I would love to find it actually, just to see what like get my finger on the pulse of 2015, like what's going on. And then I didn't do it for ages, and then I did it again, and again it was like really satirical. And then I remember I was gonna do a set again, like the same, obviously the same set again, like a week later, and then Syrian airstrikes had been announced, and I was up until like 6 a.m. trying to figure out how I'm gonna put the Syrian airstrikes in my set, because I was like, oh, I can't do a set without mentioning it. Like it's in the news, like I have to mention it. And then I stopped doing stand up for ages after that, because I was like, oh, this is horrible. I don't enjoy this. But like, who does? Like, it's not fun to do up to date satire. But yeah, then I didn't do it for a really long time. And I did a lot of improv. I did like loads of improv shows, and I did like a bit of sketch as well. And I would do like theater stuff. I did like a few theatery things. And I was like running, I like ran this like arts program to get like young people of color into performing arts and theater. So I did a lot of stuff like that. I was like really theater focused for a while, and more on the access side rather than the performing side. I still did performing, but it was definitely more on the access side. And then after the pandemic, I would do like the occasional gig. Like every 3 months, I'd do like a gig, and I'd do something like really quirky. I'm just like, oh, like some like quirky character comedy that I don't do at all anymore. And then after the pandemic, I was sort of like, okay, I'm gonna take this seriously. And I sort of was like, okay, I'm gonna gig loads. I'm gonna do loads. And that was when like I really was like, okay, I want to do stand up. I want to be a stand up. Up until that point, I was drifting a bit.
So from flirting around the fringes, doing a little bit of sketch and a little bit of improv and a little bit of this and a little bit of that, at what point did you determine that to be an observational stand-up was the right path?
It was I kind of had like a few deep chats with my friend about it, and about like what I don't know. It was, I mean, I still feel like I'm still figuring out. I think I am like a really new act, and I think I am still really figuring out what my voice is and what I want to do on stage as well. I think like from last year to this year, my set has completely changed. And that's not even last year. Sorry, I meant academic year. So I still work in academic year. I meant August. From August, that's not last year. Like, what is last year? But yeah, from August to now, my set has, because I did the Fringe this last year, last academic year. And Yeah, and it was really, really tough. It was like just really difficult crowd. Every single night was it was like a bad gig for a month. Like every night was bad for a month.
Wow.
And it kind of made, and I think it, and I think that was good because it made me question myself in a way where having like a whole bunch of good gigs would not have done. Like it made me be like, okay, are you enjoying this material? Like, is it your voice? Like, is this what you want to do? And if it was what I wanted to do, then I would have like then I would have done it. But I think when I was asking myself those questions, I was like, no, this isn't really, it's too different to who I like my on stage persona is like too different to who I am off stage. And this is not really, I'm not having a fun doing this. It's like, yeah, it's well, I was having like I wasn't not having fun, but like no, I wasn't having, I would say I would have fun when the gig was good, but when the gig was really bad, like there was just it's like nothing. And I think like even when the gig is really bad and like you've had a terrible time, there has to be something that you kind of enjoyed about it, like one thing that you enjoyed about it. Otherwise, like maybe that material, this is just for me, I don't know, I'm not saying for everyone, but like maybe that material isn't quite right for you. And I found that like if the gig was bad, there was like just no joy in it for me. It just felt like, yeah, so I dropped everything. I like got rid of all my material and I started again in September. New academic year. Yeah, so my set is like totally different to what it was then. Yeah, so and I like who knows, like maybe that will happen again. Like, it was so much work, like so much to go through to cut like everything I'd done for the last 2 years. But I don't know, that's life. Yeah.
But like you say, being relatively new in that sense, and obviously trying to find your voice. Again, you've done political comedy, you've done this observational material, and your new show, Item Girl. You refer back to your interest in Bollywood. So, in finding your voice, is there still avenues that you want to explore that you haven't? Maybe you wanted to go musical.
No, that I actually did that for a while. Well, it wasn't a musical, but it's just like I have an all right singing voice. Like the what how I would describe it is basically like people are always like, "Oh wow, I didn't realize you had a good voice." In that, like if I said I had a good voice, people would be like, "What is she saying? Like this is an average voice." But because I like play it down and I pretend like I don't have a like I can't sing, that when people hear it, they're like, "Wow, I never expected that." So that's what. But so what I used to do is I used to just sing on stage. Like there was no jokes, I would just sing, and everyone would be like, "Oh, there's no joke there. You're just seeing the whole of Ain't That a Kick in the Head. Like that's not a joke." Like that's, and I'll be like, "No, but don't you get it? Like people don't know that I can sing." They're like, "That's still not a joke." But yeah, so I don't know. I think like you have to be a good musician to do musical comedy, and like I can, yeah, I'm good at karaoke. Like that's which I don't think is the same as being a good musician. So I probably wouldn't do that. I don't know. I think it was so I think like the what ha what kind of what Item Girl is and like where it came from in this like well I mean it will be so different but it's kind of what I'm done with it from what you saw. But I think it's like I think well when I came back from the fringe, I did this thing where I wrote like a whole bunch of true facts about myself, and I did a lot of new material nights where I would just like say the true facts, and I would kind of riff off the true facts. So like all of my material now is kind of based off that. It's based off what I was doing then. Yeah, like all of it is. Yeah, so I think like my focus at the moment is like I want to be able to like talk about me, because I didn't do that. I wasn't doing that. It was all very observational actually. So I want to like be able to talk about me, and I think that's what I'm trying to do at the moment. And then I guess like it depends. Like if something comes like naturally from that process that I haven't done before, then like I'll follow it. But I'm not like okay, well I want to do this and I want to do clowning and I want to do like I just want to oh I'll kind of see what happens. Because I used to like be quite against the idea of doing like narrative. Yeah, I used to just think like, oh, I don't really want to do narrative. But that's really changed now as well.
Right.
Yeah, like I do want to do it. I think it's
Yeah.
quite, I think it's fun, it's very fun to write.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, it's fun to write, and you can, yeah. So, but yeah, so I guess I just like kind of going with the flow with it. I really don't know what I'm doing. Basically, I have no idea. Like, I don't know anything about comedy, and I don't know what I'm doing. Like, that's.
It's interesting that you said there that you wanted to talk a bit more about yourself, but you also a minute ago said about the person on stage is very different to the person that you are in real life.
I think no, I think my the person on stage was very different to who I
Right.
am off stage. Like before in August, that per like it was jarring almost. Like I think people did like I it didn't I don't think like obviously you're not exactly the same on stage as you are off stage. Like obviously that's you know like the, you, there's a there is a level of performance on stage that
Sure.
is hopefully not there when I'm having a conversation. But or probably is. But yeah, but I think it was just very far away from who I was. Like it was just I think it just came about like it was very high status, like super high status. And like quite aloof, like quite very confident. And I think it was almost a protective mechanism as well, because I'm a small Indian girl. So like it was like my way of taking up space on stage was to have this persona, like who was like quite hard, but that is not who I am really at all. And I think, yeah, I think it was like more about protecting myself and putting a wall up between me and the audience than it was for anything else. Like, yeah, and I think that's a lot. Oh, that's the reason why it. And as I was writing more material
Yeah.
for that persona, it was getting harder and harder, and it was getting harder, and it was getting harder to do longer, basically. So
Right.
at like 5 minutes, at 7 minutes, it was fine. It like did well. 10 minutes as well, like it would do well. But I think longer than that, it was tough. Like it became a drag, and it was difficult. And like I said, the material was just getting harder to write as well. Like there was stuff I wanted to talk about that didn't feel right because it was too like it didn't fit with the persona kind of thing. So yeah, so I sort of dropped that, and I think now on stage I'm very recognizable as me, I would say. Like I don't think there's like a disconnect anymore, but there really was. Yeah, and you could see it as well, like when I would literally be performing material, but then if I switched into crowd work, it would be like a completely different person, and it was really weird. I didn't realize until I was like listening back to it, and I was like, oh my God, like that's a huge jump. I think it also just meant that you couldn't really be in the moment unless I like learned how to do crowd work with that persona, which I don't know.
You're struggling to try and be the someone else that is you. That's interesting. Well, what about that flipping between material and improvisation? I mean, where are you? I know that you write for others, you've written for radio, you're writing your own material. Are you more comfortable when you're writing, when you're performing, or when you're improvising, would you say?
Well, I'm not very comfortable doing any of them, I'd say. Like very uncomfortable doing it all. No, I don't know. I don't know really. I kind of like them. I do. They are all equal. I think like what is yeah. I mean, writing like I always feel like it feels like more of a puzzle that like you can just sit there and you can kind of just like put your head down and you can just get it and you can just keep like you just keep doing it and then eventually you'll hit the right thing.
Right.
That's like right like when you're writing for like radio or writing for someone else or something, like eventually you'll get there like that.
Yeah.
So I like that. I love that. Like
Yeah.
I was like a nerd in school, and I was
Yeah.
like very academic, so I know how to just like sit there and keep going until I get it. So I quite like, so that's what I like about writing. I like that you can kind of brute force it, like you kind of just sit there and force it. That's great. Then yeah, so I always feel like that is more manageable. And then improvisation, like is that's just reacting basically.
Yeah.
So that's fine as well. I do think that writing stand-up is actually probably the hardest thing. And I think that was, and like the way I'm writing it now is really hard, because that feels like it has there's it feels like it you can't brute force it, because so much of it has to be worked out on stage as well. Like, you might think something's really funny. Like, I wrote the joke that I thought was like so good. I was like, oh, this is great. It was like a reference to Footloose, and then I did it to Silence, and I was like, oh no, it was terrible. Like, why are you referencing Footloose? Like, it's an old film. Like, you so much of it has to be worked out on stage, and then also, like, it's always better when it's always better when it's like a little bit natural as well. So before, I used to it was like I would write it out, like, word exactly how I would say it. Like, it was I thought specifically about the words, and I wouldn't do something on stage until I had like gone through it, written it out like loads and loads of times, until it was like absolutely polished. Then I would take it to the stage, and then obviously, like, you'd have to change it loads, but it was a long process before. That's probably why it was taking me so long to write stuff. But as a result, like, it always felt like very rehearsed, very performed. But I think everyone writes like that when they first start anyway. I think that is how you do it, and then you but yeah, I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out like what writing method works best for me. Like, I think it's probably a mix of doing it like that and then also working it out on stage. But it's just trying to work out, like, I think I am still figuring that's the problem with stand-up. Like, I'm still figuring out how should I write stand-up, like, what's the best method for me, like, how should I write it. Whereas, like, with the other stuff, like, I just like improv when you're improvising or like doing crowd work, like, you are just reacting to what the person's saying, so there's not really much to think about there. And then when you're writing, like, I know how to write, like, I know how to, yeah, you just have to sit there and do it. But with stand-up, it just feels like you have to figure out how you're supposed to do it, and like what's the best way for you. And it's so different and so personal to you. Like, you can't say in what works for one person is like probably might not work for you, or it might, you don't know. And it might be totally different to what you're used to, and so you will never think of trying it. And then you try it and you're like, oh, actually, this, and then it one day it might work, and then the next day it won't. So it just feels like, oh, it just feels like you just always, it's always like, oh, you just really have to, it's like a fish that's out of water. Yeah, okay, that was a good one. That was a good metaphor. Now everyone will know what I'm talking about because I use that fish metaphor.
Just back to your Footloose gag. Do you keep jokes in even if they haven't necessarily landed with an audience, just for your own amusement?
Yeah, sometimes. Some if I really like it, like if it has made me laugh loads, then I will keep it in because it has made me laugh loads, even though it's like I had like my opening joke for ages has been like, oh, I'm Pravanya, my name it that's an Indian name, it means fit to be queen, and my surname is Pillay, and that means nah. And I like that when I first said that joke, I couldn't get through it. I was laughing so much like I couldn't finish it because I thought it was so funny. Like, I thought this was like the funniest thing I'd ever said in my life, but it's not. Like, it's really stupid. It's like the stupidest thing, and everyone hates it. Like, my cousin and my brother were like, please cut it, please don't do it anymore, we hate it so much. Like, everyone's like, no, it's not a good joke, like, why are you saying it? I kept it in for a really long time. I've stopped doing it now. I'll probably still do it sometimes but a lot of the time, like, yeah, I don't know, like, some I'll leave it, I'll like keep it on the back burner, because like it's probably just how I think often, like, if something's funny, it probably is, but then it's how you explain why you found it funny. I think that's what telling the joke is. And yeah, and like, so like if you think something's funny, it probably is, but you just haven't figured out how to explain it yet properly. Also, sometimes it is just stupid, like, and it's not funny, like, they're not joking. Sometimes it's just you being like, oh, an idiot. But yeah, so I do, I like keep a lot of things on the back burner, and like I come back to them. And then also, but if it's not working in that moment, I try and like just move on to the next thing. And then like, I don't, because I could get really like hyper focused on something, and then I find it hard to, like, I just get like kind of blindsided by it. So I'm trying not to do that as well, because I don't want to be locked in on one thing. I think, like, yeah, so I never like throw it away. Like, even all the material that I said I threw away from Edinburgh, it's still there. Like, I'll definitely go back to it. Because I think there's stuff there that I want to talk about still. It's just figuring out how to do it in a way that's more me. So yes, I never really throw anything away. It's just kind of, yeah, I'll see if I ever come back to it. And I might not. I don't think I'll come back to it this bit, if I'm honest. Like maybe if it was the 80s, like yeah. But maybe if they make a remake, like yeah, fine.
God forbid. Well, let's talk about Edinburgh a little bit. You've been there a couple of times, so what's your Edinburgh experience as a whole been like?
Oh yeah, no, it's like I hate it there. It's horrible.
Yeah.
Like an awful place. Like it's a terrible place. Last year what I did was I joined a gym for the month and I went swimming every single day. And like no, like people would be like, "Oh, can you meet up?" And I'd be like, "Nah, swimming." Like that's what I would recommend. Like, and then that was for certain. I knew that. Like I was gonna go swimming. Like I was like, no matter what. My friend came into town and she was only there for like a couple of days and she was like, "Oh, can you meet?" And I was like, "Nah, sorry, I'll go swimming now." And she was like, "What? Why?" And that was the best thing I did, I would say. Yeah. But I think it is like the only place where you can learn at that pace. Like I don't think you could do that there's like nowhere else where you could do that. And it is kind of nice for that whole month. Well, it's not nice, but I think it is really good for that whole month to kind of prioritize comedy in a way that, I mean, we all prioritize comedy, obviously, but like the way that you do it in Edinburgh is really unique to the rest of the year, I would say. Because like when you're here, like you do have to think about other stuff. Like most of us have day jobs, like a lot of us have day jobs as well. And yeah, but there in Edinburgh, like you can just, it is. You it's like your main it's why you're there, so it is the main focus, and it is, and like that is kind of, it is kind of nice to be able to prioritize it in that way. It's like, well, it is worth going, I think. Well, I'm not probably not gonna go this year because it's too expensive. But like yeah, I mean, but last year they covered my, it was a really great deal from Gilded Balloon. Like they like covered my accommodation and stuff, so that was really good. So all I had to focus on was like the show and swimming. It was great. It was really great. But yeah, and yeah, so I think it's tough. But also it might be, maybe it's more fun if you're like more fun person. Okay. Probably. Like, yeah.
So while you're there, when you're not performing and not swimming, I mean, did you have time to network, to watch other shows?
Yeah, I don't actually watch a lot of shows. It's actually really bad how few shows I watched this year. I was really focused on the swimming. Like, I can't. Like, I had so much swimming and crying to do. I just didn't have time to watch many shows. But yeah, no, I actually think that was, yeah, I think I would, I think it's, yeah, I find, yeah, I think I would like to, I think, yeah, if I go back, I'd like to watch more shows this time, to be honest. And, but it, yeah, it is, that is all part of it, isn't it? Like, it's all good. Yeah, and it's nice being with everyone else as well. That is really nice.
Are you still able to watch comedy and find it funny, or do you analyze it as a comedian?
No, I think I can still watch it. I just watch it and find it funny. Like if I'm yeah, I just watch it and then afterwards I like think about it and I'm like, "Oh, why did you find that bit funny?" I think it's, yeah, it's like, yeah, it's, but in the time I just kind of watch it. First time around, like I just watch it, I would say. And then like on the rewatches, it's like if I'm like watching something because I'm like I want to learn, or like I'm trying to figure something out, then it's, yeah. But you can, I think you can switch it off. You can switch that off, definitely. Like just relax, like switch it off. I'm literally the most highly strung and tense person in the world. I can't believe my advice was just relax. Like that's
Go swimming.
yeah, exactly.
What about competition? So, like, you were up there for the So You Think You're Funny, but also competition in general, because you've done other competitions. How do you fare in competitions? How do you see them?
The only competition that I've done well in was So You Think You're Funny. Actually, I don't think I've been in, I don't think I've put myself over the BBC competition a few times. But yeah, no, So You Think, like I don't know. I think I like I know I just sort of do it. Yeah. I just sort of do it and then like if whatever happens, happens. I don't know. It's, I think, I have to be like real with all of that stuff. Like, but yeah, I have to be like really careful with how much importance I put on it for me, because it can, because I like, I'm just very careful about where I get validation from. And I think that's because I think like, yeah, for me, I try. Yeah, it's just because I don't want to end up in a spiral, like a negative spiral. So I am like super careful about, yeah, like how I measure how good I am, or like how, or where I'm at. And especially in this industry as well, like so much of it is like, all of it is external. Like all of it is external. So you can't, yeah, actually, well, yeah, everything is external. So I think I kind of like have a few like internal markers. And I try and measure it, measure against those rather than like competitions and stuff. And I think you obviously have to do competitions. And also, what I would say is that like, even if your like mind is, because what I found out so think it funny, especially at the final, is that my mind was like really calm, but my body was like insane. Like I could feel my heart beating loads, and I was like shaking, and I was so ner and like I felt really nervous like physically, but my mind, because I think I trained it, was like really calm, but like it just, but it felt like I was on a roller coaster. And it was really weird to have that disconnect. And it's probably because like I was pushing it down, like rather than like, yeah, because I was trying to be calm. But yeah, so obviously like, obviously they matter, and like obviously when you're doing them, like you care about them. But it's, I think until it's like, until you're like in the, until I'm like in the final of something, I tr like I don't. I try, like I just try not to think about it too much when I do it, because also because you just don't know, like on the night, like you could have a bad night, or like maybe you just, it's just so many different factors. It's not always about whether you were good enough, although sometimes it is about whether you're good enough. But yeah, I think a lot of the ones that I did get through is like, I'm like, oh yeah, I just wasn't good enough for those. Like that's fine.
Do you often get those kinds of nerves, that anxiety before doing a show, or is it just that
Yeah, I
specific?
used to. I do have quite bad anxiety. Like
Right.
that's just something classic, classic girl in her late 20s with anxiety, and depression, all of them. But yeah, I do have. I have it quite. I had, especially when I was a bit younger, I had it really bad. There was a time when like I could literally like, I would have like a panic attack before I went on stage. Or I'd start to get one, and then, but then, I really wanted to do it. But then like what I would say is like the alternative is you just go home. So like you either do the set or you go home. Like there's no in between. There's no like, yeah, there's no compromise. So, and then sometimes going home would win, especially when I was younger. It would, that would be the thing that I did. But then after that, yeah, but like those are the only two options. So you kind of just have to do one of those two things. Be okay with whichever one you did. But yeah, no, I get, I there's like, yeah, there's time, I get, yeah, I'm very anxious, so I do get anxious about stuff. And I still, I think there'll still be loads of gigs that I get really anxious about, but I know also that I do better when I'm more relaxed, which I then I get anxious that I'm not more relaxed, so it's a real spiral.
What about that validation then that you spoke of? Where do you get that validation? How do you respond to feedback and criticism?
I think like, I think I actually, that this is actually something that I have said in job interviews, but I respond very well to feedback and criticism. Like I think I respond really, really well to it. I just don't really care. Like I'm just like not very attached to stuff. I try not to get too attached to things. So, and if someone's like, that doesn't work, then I'm like, okay, fine. And like, fine, well, I'll try again, I'll throw it out. That kind of thing, because I found that that's the best. That's just gonna make you a better act, basically. Like that's what you just have to do. I think it's just like I want to be like the best that I can be. And I think what comes with that is responding well to criticism, and not taking anything too personally, and not thinking that you're already like there with anything. Like if it can be better, like tell me how it could be better. But yeah, no, I think like in like internal validation markers are usually like, okay, is usually like, what did you learn? Like, did you learn something from this? And what was it? And that, and then kind of going with that, and that being like, okay, well, it was a bad gig, but you got this from it. It's finding stuff like that in it. And even with the good gigs as well, it's like, okay, that was a good gig. You had a lot of fun, but like, what did you learn? And so it's asking yourself that even when it's good, and even when you're just enjoying it, like it's being like, okay, yeah, but what did you learn? And I think doing that every time helps sort of makes me focus on me rather than outward, which I just think like for me, you just need to do, because in this, like when you're doing comedy, just because otherwise it's just so easy to like not have any self-worth. Like it's really easy to lose all of it. And like, well, like if you're not careful, like one bad gig and that's it, you hate yourself. So like you just have to, I think you have to put measures in place and be careful, basically.
So what then are those the most important lessons then that you've learned so far?
Oh, they're always like really small things. They're never like big learnings. Or they all like the big le like they're like lots of small things that build up to a big learnings. I think the biggest one was was Edinburgh. That was probably the biggest thing, and like realizing that I wanted to do something different to what I was doing, and realizing that I had to be more myself on stage. I think that was the biggest thing that I've learned so far. And that was really recently. It was like not that long ago. And then I think like, yeah, I think it's like, then like a lot of it was just small stuff like that didn't work. Like that's what I learned. I learned that that particular line doesn't work, or this line works a bit better here, like this, or like it's, yeah. So it's small stuff like that as well a lot of the time. When is the big stuff is this drastic? It's like you change all your material, then that's that. Like it's, but yeah. So it's, yeah. So it's mainly, it's always like just little things.
So you said you're not doing Edinburgh this year, but you are working on a new show, Item Girl. Why didn't you tell me about that?
Yeah, so it comes, so Item Girl, it's like a phenomenon in Bollywood, and it's like really exclusive to the genre. Like the Item Girl like doesn't exist in any other type in any other cinema like across the world. But essentially, basically in Bollywood you have songs, everyone knows that. You have dance numbers, and like often the best dance number, like the best song, like it's like a fast, fun song. It won't be performed by the lead actors. It'll be performed by just like a random woman will just come and do the song and then leave. And like she won't be relevant to the plot. The song probably won't even be relevant to the plot. Like in a few of them, plot is going on in the background and the song is happening. Like, yeah, it just, yeah. So she won't be relevant to the plot. You'll never see her again in the movie. She won't really be mentioned or referenced at all either. And often like, yeah, it's, yeah, and like I think it existed originally, like the Item Girl existed originally as because like the main lead that like in Bollywood movies has to be like very kind of pure and chaste and like that, and so she couldn't do a sexy dance essentially. And then but now it's like really coveted, like all the top actresses want to be an Item Girl, and like, and also there's like Item Boys now as well, like all the actors want to do, like because it is the commercial success of the film, like it is, you'll get paid loads to do it and it will be what everyone sees. Like even if people don't see the movie, they'll probably see the item number. And it'll be the one that's played at parties. Like it's, yeah, it is often the best part of the film. It's just the most fun part of the film for sure. Like it will be the most fun part of the film. And it's just really cool how it's had that turnaround, and how like A-listers want to do it now. And if you're doing like an item number, it's like really cool. And I think that, yeah, and so I was, it's just, I don't know, like I've always really liked that as a concept, and I like how it's like so unique to the genre as well, like it doesn't exist anywhere else. And I think it's like kind of fun to be the item girl, so I sort of was like, yeah, what, I don't know, like I was like, that would be fun. There was show around, and that was the idea I had. And then I was like, oh, let's see what happens. So, but yeah.
So what's the path that you're taking the show on then, if not Edinburgh? Is that a next year? Is that a 2025 show?
I think I'll take it to Edinburgh next year, yeah, as a show. But at the moment, it will just be work in progresses,
Yeah. Will
basically.
it feature a big Bollywood dance number?
Yeah, it will definitely have that. I'm not, yeah, it will definitely have that. It might have five. No, that's too much.
Yeah,
That's like the whole hour, like done. Like I need to put jokes in. Also, that's so strenuous. Like to do that every day for a month, five Bollywood dances. You know what? Actually, maybe I should do it, and I won't have to go swimming. It'll save me some money.
little while ago we mentioned the lockdown. Now, obviously, you started comedy shortly before then, and your comedy is a little different after. But during that interim period, how was that for you? What changed? How did it affect you as a comedian?
I think it was so weird. Like it was just like really weird before. Like it
Yeah.
was just like really, really old. It didn't really have anything to it, to be honest. It was just like I was just like, how can I be as weird as possible on stage? Like that was what I would ask. Like one time I like came out to the Match of the Day theme tune, like dribbling a basketball. And then I fell over. It was so funny. So good. The fall was so funny. Yeah, but it was like that. It was like it didn't like it wasn't. It was just like how could I be? You know, a lot of it was football themed because I used to do this thing where I used to get the audience to sing "Football's Coming Home." I don't know why so much of it was football themed. I do really love football songs, but I find the game to be very dull. So I absolutely love the songs. So maybe that was what that was. Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't really. I don't know. I just knew that I wanted to. I don't know. I've always like. I wanted to do something like a bit different, but I didn't know what that was. Like, I didn't really. I knew I didn't want to do like straight stand up. That I was seeing a lot of.
Right.
Like, that wasn't really what I wanted to do. I mean, I enjoyed it and like I've always thought it was fun, but it like wasn't what I wanted to do. And so I would just. So I was just. So I went like really the other way, but that. Yeah. That was also still not really what I wanted. Like it was, yeah. So it's just basically like trying to figure out. I mean, like I was, yeah, I was like, you know, like crazy at the time as well. No, that's not a good way to describe it. It was depression. No, I don't. I take that back. I didn't say it. But I was like not very well. So, like I was. So I think you could like see that in what I was doing. As, but like it is, yeah. It is just. I think it is just about like trying everything and seeing what sticks and what works
Yeah.
and kind of going with what you think at the time
Yeah.
and then describing it crazy later on.
Are there people that you've seen or that you've part of your peer group who inspire you to, well, inspire you, but also make you think about those kinds of changes about who you are, who you want to be?
Oh yeah, my friend Sam Williams is
Yeah.
like he's like a huge reason that like all the big changes I make, like it's often because it's often after a conversation with him, like he'll help me frame it really nicely
Right.
and think about it. Like when I was doing the really weird stuff, he was like, "Is this actually what you want to do?" And I was like, "Like it's yeah." Well, he was like, "Yeah, you've got a lovely singing voice, but like, do you need to sing all the time? Like, is there a joke?" That was a no one was asking me that, and I think it was a very important question to ask. Yeah, there's I think loads of all like loads of people in my peer group like I'm always like really impressed with, and I they're like it's always fun and they always have great ideas and stuff. Yeah, it's a nice group, I'd
Yeah.
say. So it's good. But yeah.
So what then so far have been your best and worst experiences in comedy?
Worst was Edinburgh. It was just a barrage. It was like every single night. But then that was also like very good. But the shows they were hard. They were really tough. And in the moment they were like just very difficult. So even though like I got a lot from it, and I knew I would at the time as well. That's the thing. Like while I was doing it, I was like, right now it's really difficult, but you're gonna get a lot from it. And I did.
Yeah.
But the shows themselves, they were tough shows. But I think everyone would probably say that anyway, especially about like their first time in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
I don't like I think most people have like a tough first time in Edinburgh, especially doing like a mixed bill and stuff. And then my best time, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure really. I kind of I like the gigs that like surprise me, like the gigs where I expect them to be really bad, but then they are actually quite fun. Like I did a gig in Cornwall and I thought that was going to be really tough. Also, I keep doing this thing where like when I gig outside London, where I'll Google just before I go on stage, I'll Google like demographics in Cornwall, and it will always be like 98% white, and then I'll be like, oh no, I just have to stop doing that. Like it's just a bad thing to do just before you go on stage. But that Cornwall gig, I was like, oh, this can be really tough. This can be really difficult. And it was actually so lovely. And I had a really nice time. And they were quite a rowdy audience as well. That's the thing. That's so when I was hearing it, I was like, oh, they're gonna hate me. But they really liked me and they were really nice. And yeah, and I got a lot out of it as well in terms of like learning and also in terms of confidence, because because they were an audience I thought I wouldn't be able to win over, and then I did win them over, and that felt good. So I think those are always like the nicest gigs, like the ones, and then obviously like the gigs where you like it's like your home turf, and you're like, oh yeah, all these people are the same as me, this is a room full of me. Like those are like those are, you could just go on, like I did comedy queers in London, and that was just so great. Like I just went on stage and was like, this belt is, I was wearing a really big belt, it was too big, the belt was too big, and I just went on stage and said, this belt is too big, and like that was it, they loved me. And it's like in those rooms it's great, because you can, that's when you can like just really be yourself, and you, and like that's when you feel, that's I think when I'm most relaxed. So obviously those ones are really fun as well. But yeah, but I do think it's the ones that like where you like surprise, where you're pleasantly surprised. Even that one in Leicester, I don't know if you came to it, with that drunk lady at the back who had to be removed. I don't know if you were at that one.
Oh
It was
yes, yeah,
like
the mixed bill. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I was there,
Like I wasn't expecting that to go well at all. I was expecting that to go really badly, and then it went okay. And also that drunk lady, apparently she really enjoyed my set. Like they were, when I came on stage, Shelf were like, oh yeah, she really loved the shard bit. And I was like, oh great. It's a shame she had to leave. No, she was very disruptive,
She was
but
disruptive, but she was supportive.
yeah, she was really supportive as
She
well.
wasn't against what was going on.
No, no, not at
She was
all.
trying to be encouraging and helpful, just in a very loud,
Which is like,
obnoxious
yeah, which
way.
is actually quite nice. Yeah, no, that's it. Yeah.
So, how can we find out about you and where we can come and see you?
I guess just follow me on Instagram. It's probably the best one. Pravanya Pillay 69, the year I was born. And yeah, so that's probably the best way. That's where I post most things. But yeah.
And my final question then, how would you sum up comedy in a nutshell?
I should have prepared this one.
Everyone says that. No one ever does.
Yeah, this stuff's really, now I'm like, this is so stupid. I guess it's like an adventure, isn't it? It's like a fun adventure. Yeah, I think it makes you do things that you wouldn't do usually. Like I would never have driven 7 hours to Cornwall for any other reason, like for no other reason, but I did it. So I think it is a bit of an adventure. Like it does forces you like well out of your comfort zone in a really good way.
Yeah. Pavani, thank you so much.
No worries. Thanks for having me. This was really fun.